The tax system is an amazing tool that can give the proper signals and incentives for building an economy that's sustainable and fair and balanced, that can have a dynamic equilibrium. And so basically the ethic is what you work for with your mental and physical labor. We want to privatize that fully. We say that's yours. You work for it. So we want to untax people's wages and their labor and productive goods producing businesses and services producing businesses. We want to take those taxes off and instead shift it onto a capturing of this tremendous value of land and resources. If you think of the surface land, this would be still private ownership, but conditional. Conditional use right, private use right, is conditional upon paying back to society a fair share for the land that you've enclosed and privatized. So those that have more valuable land or more land, they have privatized more than their fair share, but in exchange they will give back to society economic rent via a land value capture, land value tax type of system. Now this is enormous sum. You have there in Australia, you have Brian Kavanaugh, who's done some excellent research on this. He's shown that up to one-third of GDP of Australia and other developed countries as well is this resource rent. So imagine we're paying resource rent to the few who own so much of the resources, or for mortgages to the banks. That's who's capturing it now. And on top of that, the ordinary person is paying taxes. So we can eliminate the taxes on the middle class, the poor people, the working people, and collect this huge one-third of GDP that is resource rent, and that adequately provides for the basis of all societal needs, healthcare system, infrastructure, public schools, even with funds left over for direct citizen dividend distributions like they do in Alaska with the oil fund, with everybody getting a direct check as their fair share rights of a portion of the oil wealth.
Alana, what you're describing there is as big a concept as what people perhaps didn't realize when slavery was apparent. What's the relationship between slavery and this privatization of economic rent?
Well, you know, I think it is helpful that you show the connection, because it is indeed a huge issue like slavery was, because now we have wage slavery. And if there's no safety net in society, in the United States, safety net is pretty shredded at this point. And we have increasing hunger, poverty, homelessness. And I know you have some of that in Australia. It's worse than slavery for some people, because if you're a slave, you're at least treated as well as livestock. You've given food and shelter and health care so that you can maintain your health, so that you can work. But in our kind of system, if you can't find a job, or you can't find a job that pays enough to pay a rent and keep shelter over your head, without sufficient kind of safety net, you're pretty much on the streets and your health is failing. So the comparison to slavery is that without land, we eventually fall into slavery, even though an economy might show growth and productivity. There is a divide, and there's a divide that some people are getting ahead and some people start falling behind. This is a law, an economic law called the law of rent. And I think that's what really brought me into this field of economics, when I understood the functioning of the law of rent and how that puts the wealth divide right there at source in terms of the land problem. And then you start seeing how we can solve this. It brings economics from being a dismal science to a very hopeful social science that can solve our social problems and our economic problems at source.
A lot of people say that democracy guarantees freedom, but within your book, The Earth Belongs to Everyone, how does an Earth Rights democracy ensure this genuinely occurs?
Well, democracy, it's a political democracy only. We both U.S. and Australia, we brought from Europe hundreds of years ago the same economic system and policy of land privatization, of the way we structure the monetary system. So if we don't have fundamental economic democracy, a political democracy begins to deteriorate, and that's what we're seeing. It becomes ruled by the rich as the wealth concentrates. Militarism takes off. The military is used to further consolidate the power of the super rich and the banking institutions. So society becomes very, very split, and that eventually exploits pretty much everyone except the super rich. Not to point at any particular people, I mean, if you look at Bill Gates and some of these very rich people, they're very concerned about the wealth divide. And they're doing what they can to do something about it. But this is something we're all going to have to figure out, how to create a fair society. Did I answer your question? Did I get a little bit off?
That sounds pretty good. I mean, what we're really talking about is some economic freedom to go in hand with our right to choose the candidate we want to represent our values. And at the moment, that's missing, isn't it?
Well, the candidates, I ran for Congress once here in Pennsylvania. I was in the Green Party ticket. And I saw firsthand the importance of having a lot of money to run for political office. And not just for the practical necessity of your advertising, your promotion, and so on, and having a staff. But also, they publish those numbers of how much funds you've raised. Now, most Green Party people don't raise a lot of money compared to what over here the mainstream Republican and Democrats raise. And my campaign was doing very, very well. I was getting a lot of press, a lot of attention, a lot of good comments. And then the week that we had to publish the amount of funds we've raised, suddenly I wasn't taken very seriously, simply because I didn't have the big financial campaign chest that the other ones did. So money is essential to make it, and that's what happened. The big money players buy off the politicians. So we're having right now in the middle of struggle in this country to try to get our democracy back, because many of us think that we've pretty well, it's been hanging by a thread.
What would be your, you know, what gives you hope in America at the moment? It seems like there's just such turmoil.
Well, sometimes turmoil itself can be hopeful, because things have to break apart to a certain degree to wake people up, and there's certainly more interest in this election than the media reporting than ever they've seen before. These old guys in the media have been around 40 years, and they say this is the most interest they've ever seen in an election. So these the two different candidates that are running, they're very, very different. This is a real choice that we're being asked, and I don't know, but I think that it's going to be polarizing whoever gets in there, but I do think that if Republicans should happen to get in there, there are so many people in distress over what the Republicans have led us in so far that I think we're going to see more chaos in this country. So I guess the hope there is that through chaos, people start looking and listening and seeking for new ways and new directions. And certainly our movement has that to offer. There's a Michael Hudson. I think you interviewed Michael not long ago, didn't you, Carl?
Yep.
And Michael is getting more and more attention over here all the time. There's more media attention of Michael, and he's chief economic advisor to Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And Dennis is he just speaks truth to power all the time. He's an incredibly dynamic politician. And Dennis has a great deal of clarity. He's following the same economic lines that you and I are talking about right now. Michael Hudson has a great clarity in terms of the land problem and the money and finance problem. So the ideas are getting out. People are paying attention to Dennis and to Michael. That's good news, isn't it?